Philadelphia Inquirer, January 20th, 1920. Baseball rowdyism openly encouraged, by Joe Villa. American Association treads dangerous ground in resolution permitting players to argue with umpires. Possibly with the idea of providing more excitement for the baseball public in the Middle West, the club owners of the American Association adopted a resolution at their meeting in Chicago last week permitting players to argue in a gentlemanly manner with the umpires when they believe close decisions have been made against them incorrectly. But the club owners made it plain that the use of profanity and obscene language would be stamped out. Thomas Hickey, president of the American Association, announced that players found guilty of abusing umpires in an objectionable way would be warned for a first offense, but would be heavily fined thereafter. The rules that govern ball games played by the major and minor leagues are uniform. They distinctly prohibit protests by players, captains, or managers against decisions by the umpire unless a technical interpretation of a rule is involved. Even a strict enforcement of this necessary provision in the major leagues has failed to suppress outbreaks of rowdyism at times. The American Association, however, has paved the way for endless disorder. The association club owners have openly encouraged rowdyism on the field. They have decided to ignore the rules, which would keep the game free from senseless kicking and needless delays. Hot-headed rushes at the umpire and unwarranted kicking against all close decisions are sure to follow the letting down of the bars. The American Association club owners should rescind their foolish policy before it's too late. A first-class ball club can win without employing the tiresome alibi of robbed by the umpire.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to This Week in 1920s Baseball. This is Josh, a.k.a. Bucketfoot. I got Matthew, a.k.a. Sweetbread, being rowdy on the line. How you doing there, Sweetbread?
All up for the rowdiness, Josh. How you doing, Bucketfoot? What's going on?
I'm doing good, man. You are full of rowdyism.
I'm rowdy today, yeah.
I think our listeners won't be surprised that we liked that article because it is just funny. Paints a fun picture of 1920s baseball, the sort of balance between it being a gentleman's game as it was and being like a rough and tumble high stakes sport that it was becoming. I like the term kicking as like a thing. Like, is that literal? Are they literally?
As I was reading the article, I kept thinking like, are they talking about like, you know, like kicking one's shins or something, or
like that tradition of like kicking dirt at the umpire. Yeah.
Like, where does that come from? Like, what is that? Why is that a thing? Kicking dirt at somebody.
That is a thing.
Why is that such an insult?
I don't know. It's very insulting. The funny thing is that I was looking for articles from this week in 100 years ago. So, but by habit, I typed in 1920 into the database there. So I found that article is actually from January of 1920. So it's 101 years ago, but it brought us into a whole interesting world of reading about the American Association. I'll tell you another article I found from 1907, just really randomly. It says, neither rooting at baseball games nor high-speed automobiling is conducive to longevity. Within the last 48 hours, a shouter at a baseball contest in Binghamton and one of Lancaster's most prominent citizens died of heart failure. The strenuous life of the present age necessarily abbreviates length of days. So life in 1907 was too fast-paced. It said the prominent citizen, he was on a swift automobile ride.
So yeah, it's just too stressful, Josh. Too stressful, like going to a baseball game and being a diehard fan. Probably like today, you know?
And driving around in a car.
I'm just picturing like a, you know, a regular vet, you know, veteran stadium, old, you know, goer, just
700 level,
just getting way too riled up. And unfortunately having the medics being called.
They blamed this guy's death on shouting at the baseball game. He died 48 hours too much in 1907. It's funny to think about how what they thought of as fast paced living. 1907, but hey, maybe who knows? Maybe all this fast driving and baseball rooting is bad for our health. Who knows? But it was super fun to find that article from 1920 and read a little bit about the American Association. So my first question, of course, was, what is that? Because I was like, do they mean the American League? But no, they mean a separate league, what we would now consider a minor league. So we're over here trying to figure out the structure of 1920s baseball leagues. And, you know, it was a bit of a Wild West. What we think of now is this rigidly defined major league, minor league system just wasn't the case, right?
Yeah, and we've been talking about this because it's been in the news recently, but I think, you know, and again, we're not super experts on the minor history of the minor leagues, but I think we've talked about this a little bit, how it is a kind of a loose structure where most of the teams weren't necessarily farm clubs that were directly associated with the major league teams.
I mean, not at all.
Right? They weren't independently owned. The leagues were completely separately run. No decision making was made officially by any of the major league teams, right, for these other teams. Right.
They were totally independent. They were thought of as minor leagues, even at the time. And they certainly make that transfer now to how you might think about them. It's funny because a lot of times for American Association, they'll abbreviate it as double A, but they don't, it doesn't mean double A like what we think of as double A minor leagues. It just means the American Association, which was of course different than the American League, which was of course separate from the National League, which was of course separate from the Federal League. Like they really just got like a, they needed more words. They just used the thesaurus for a country and they just put every team in there. So it's very confusing, but part of it too had to do with geography because there wasn't Major League Baseball west of the Mississippi. Really, if you wanted to see games, which people did all over the country, all these independent leagues started popping up, and then some of them became very good at developing players, and so a lot of guys would get signed there on their way east, you know, to the big leagues. So that's kind of how it broke down. It wasn't really until Branch Rickey when Rickey was with the Cardinals, before he was with the Dodgers, he started to kind of like consolidate these independent leagues. And of course, by the 50s, travel was much easier. It was much air travel and whatnot. It was much easier to get around the country. So they started to consolidate these minor leagues. But we just had fun looking at the minor league teams of the 20s. I found a couple things that caught my eye. The first thing that caught my eye was that the St. Paul Saints, which is a minor league team that exists now, but what caught my eye was that in 1920, they were part of this association with all the rowdyism, but they went 115-49. Like, what a record that is.
That's impressive. That's a lot of games too. That's a lot more. At the time it was normal, but nowadays we're used to these minor league teams. They play less games, I think, right, than the majors.
And that's more than the majors.
Yeah. Because at the time they were playing 154, I think, in the majors. So, yeah, a lot more.
And I found another team. I found an article about the 1922 Vernon Tigers. Their record was 123-76.
That's a lot of games.
That's 199 games, if my math is right. They played 199 games. I also have to tell you, this is going slightly out of my loosely planned outline here. I have to tell you, the Vernon Tigers caught my eye because a lot of guys who went on to be in the majors or were in the majors on their way down played on this team. And it is absolutely some of the greatest names ever assembled on a single roster. I never heard of the Vernon Tigers. Some of these guys you've heard of, some of them you never have. But check out some of these names. Weezer Dell. Slim Love, who's like my favorite name of all time.
Yeah, Slim Love came up in our NAR episode, right? Didn't he? Yeah.
He was my number one pick. So Slim Love, Weezer Dell, a guy named Chicken Hawks, a guy named Duke Cross, Chet Chadbourne, Ping Bodie, Truck Hanna. These are all guys we've talked about as like NAR All-Stars, and they were all assembled on the 1922 Vernon Tigers. So they were of the Pacific Coast League, which is still a league and considered, is the PCL considered independent? Yeah, right? It's not.
Yeah, I think historically it was, I think it was considered the premier
Minor league.
Minor league. It was where DiMaggio, of course, came to fame with the San Francisco Seals. But yeah, like you said before, there was no teams west of the Mississippi. And there, of course, you know, with all the Western growth, there was a lot of people that wanted baseball out there. So yeah, you think about, yeah, they probably, you know, somebody local, they're not going to pack their bags and move to New York City to play baseball. They're going to play for their local team.
The scouts probably never saw them. Like, yeah, they didn't have a record behind them.
A lot of great players have probably never made it to the majors that played in the Pacific Coast League, I'm sure, over the years. And
yeah,
there's plenty of people that could tell us a lot more about it. But yeah, I was like doing a little bit of research, and there's like supposedly these like iconic PCL seasons. And I think one of them is 1922. So we'll have to look into that more in the future.
And Vernon is from Vernon, California. So that is
okay.
Obviously, PCL was not all California teams, but mostly out that way. That 1920 team, I just was reading about them because they're considered one of the best minor league teams of all time. I mean, that record, 115-49, is incredible. Of course, I just started like looking at the names. A guy named Marty Berghammer, Bubbles Hargrave, who then did go on to be in the majors.
And John, this is the St. Paul Saints, right?
Yeah, these are all the 1920 St. Paul Saints. So this is like one of the best minor league teams of all time. That only caught my attention because I found the article about the rowdyism in the American Association. They had a guy named Goldie Rapp, a guy named Bruno Haas, Frank Brazil. That's like I think that's like a pro wrestler's name, Frank Brazil.
Frank Ocean. This reminds me of Frank, the Frank Ocean, the singer. Yeah, it's like the same kind of thing. Yeah,
Frank Brazil, Steamboat Williams. And then I looked at their next year, they had a guy named Mutt Williams and a guy named Cuckoo Christensen.
Christensen.
That's pretty good. And then I was looking, just because I love looking at these rosters, the 1923 Saints had a couple guys you'll recognize. Brago Roth, who was on the Senators in our 1920 season.
I think Brago Roth might have been on my NAR All-Stars. I'm trying to remember. Yeah.
And Speed Martin, who was a pitcher for that Cubs team with all the good nicknames. Sometimes you'll find a guy where they just list a single name. Like, you don't know if it's a first name or it's last name or it's just a nickname. But there's a guy in the 1921 Saints who's just listed as Finch.
That's wonderful.
And there's a guy in the Newark Bears named Torp. T-O-R-P-E, that's it. That's his full roster name, Torp. Oh, and then I found a guy named Bunny Fabrique. If that's how you pronounce it. F-A-B-R-I-Q-U-E. Fabrique? Bunny
Fabrique.
If I would have listed him, you guys would have all thought that was a made-up player's name. There's no way Bunny Fabrique is a real person, but totally is. So I've been adding to my old-timey baseball name generator because, you know, this independent leagues of the 20s or these minor leagues of the 20s bringing up a whole host of interesting names.
We got to bring that generator back. Can we retweet that out?
Yeah.
We should do that. Yeah.
1920s baseball. It's been used a lot. I saw those, look at the stats. It's been used like a thousand different people clicked on it. So it's like making the rounds. I'm gonna ask you a question, but before I do that, I'm gonna just give you a couple more names that I was excited about. Team names. So there was the St. Paul Saints, but then there was also the St. Paul Apostles, which is obviously biblical, but also just rolls off the tongue. Then there was the New Orleans Zephyrs, who went on to become the New Orleans Baby Cakes, who apparently were a team just until a couple years ago. That was news to me. The Toledo Iron Men, the Louisville Colonels, the Wichita Izzies of the Western Leagues, the Toledo Glass Sox, which like Red Sox, White Sox, okay, Glass Sox? There was a team in the Mississippi State League called the Vicksburg Hillbillies.
I love it.
And then there was, of course, the Longview Cannibals. You can actually buy a Longview Cannibals shirt. I saw one out there. So that is a pretty, pretty good team name.
I have to add that the Longview Cannibals like somehow managed to even outdo themselves. That they also were called the Wichita Falls Sputters, and they had a manager named Benny Brownlow, which I thought was pretty funny.
That's pretty good. So where
Benny Brownlow?
Where were they based out of? Where's Longview?
I guess Wichita. Well, they were in Longview, Texas.
Okay, and they moved up to Kansas.
Wichita Falls, Texas, actually.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, which must have been nearby
the same area. I think of the Green Day album, Longview. Or no, that's the name of the song. Anyway, so what is, so yes, it was very fun for us to just get a taste of this American Association and just sort of read about it, this independent baseball prior to the centralized farm system. But there was a lot of restructuring happening. We talked about this a little bit last time. Part of this was because of the gambling problem, right? And part of it was just because of money. Like they, the main leagues, the major leagues, they didn't want to have competition, right? Essentially. And so, and they didn't want to have their brand tarnished and so on. So you were doing a little bit of more research about what was happening here in the off season between the 20 and 21 year.
Talking about the Lasker plan, or are we still, yes, still talking about? Okay. Yeah. So we kept seeing this name Lasker plan pop up and we weren't really sure.
Lasker.
Yeah. And it's named after Albert D. Lasker, who is a Chicago businessman. And at this point, I think around 1920, he is the major stockholder in the Cubs, meaning he has the, you know, the plurality or the majority of the shares in the club. In that National League club. So from what I could tell, and again, there's a couple of good articles out there if you just search Lasker plan, it was this ongoing plan to kind of create some sort of governing body that would oversee both the National League and the American League and kind of, you know, make decisions when the two leagues couldn't agree or just, you know, to deal with certain things that would need to come from the league itself and not from the particular owner, like such as gambling, you know, or disciplinary issues. The origins of it seem to be like between this idea of competition, like you were mentioning with the Federal League and other leagues, and worrying about how they were going to compete with these other leagues, but also with some disagreements over like World War One and when to end the season and who, what players to send. And of course there was like, you know, different teams had different rosters and they may or may not have lost more of their players to the draft. So it seems like it may have been Harry Frazee's I can never get that name right. Right. Is it Frazee?
It just looks so odd in print. Yeah. It's the Z and then the double E. I don't know.
All right. So maybe Harry Frazee, they originally wanted a governing body, right? Like a board to preside over both leagues. And they originally wanted Taft, you know, former President Taft. This is before he becomes Chief Justice.
But after
trivia nerds.
After he got stuck in the bathtub.
After he gets stuck in the bathtub, before he becomes the first person to ever become Chief Justice of the Supreme Court or in the Supreme Court after becoming after being a U.S. president.
But you have to mention the bathtub.
Yes, we have to mention the bathtub. He actually gets pushed to the side in favor of Landis. And this has been going on for a couple of years back and forth about how they're going to restructure the leadership of both leagues. And we have Ben Johnson on one end. Who's the president of the American League. Of course, a lot of you probably remember who Ben Johnson is. He is vehemently against this, like, because he wants more control. So some of the American League teams and pretty much all the National League teams, they threaten to create a new 12-team league.
And they're pretty independent at the time, the two leagues, right? Like,
yeah there's an agreement like, for the World Series, there's an agreement. And they've come together in 1915, when the Federal League, who was that big upstart league that was, I think, formed in 1914, basically stole a bunch of players. And there was an antitrust lawsuit against the National League and the American League, in which Landis, there you go, there's Kennesaw Mountain Landis. He was the one that presided over it. Eventually, they were not ruled as a trust, so they didn't have to break up. But eventually, by 1920, things are starting to get settled. And eventually what is going to be the commissionership of baseball, right, which we still have today, is created and Landis is put in as the sole person. Originally, then it was going to be like a three-person board. So you know, kind of an interesting, you can kind of look that up and get more information about it. It was a little confusing, I think, for both of us because like, what is the Lasker plan? It's really just the idea of creating a board to oversee a lot of the decisions.
And I think a lot of what we take for granted, you know, like anything in history, it wasn't inevitable. So so what we think of as of just common sense, like that there's the leagues and then there's Major League Baseball as its own organization with its commissioner and its league officials and all that kind of stuff. But that's not a given, right? Because the teams were independent entities. The leagues were their own.
And there was all these like disagreement about like, how do they split up the winnings from the World Series? How do they, what are the ticket prices going to be in the playoffs? And on down through discipline, right? I mean, you know, one team owner might not want to discipline his player because he's a star player, right? So
exactly.
I guess some, I mean, again, for Z, he's maligned, right? For the no net and the Babe Ruth and all that. But he had a good sense, I guess, at this point to try to create like some sort of independent body to make these decisions. Cause you know, this was going on for years and it probably strengthened the relationship between the two leagues as well as their preeminence over any other league in baseball. Right. The fact that because if they kept infighting and there could have been a number of other leagues that would have come up and challenged them. Right. So,
I think in a way it saved Major League Baseball as we know it, or, you know, created the structure.
And of course it paves the way for Landis's landmark decision in 1921, which we'll look at later too.
So it was just about 100 years ago, almost exactly. What I'm looking at says he was appointed commissioner in November of 1920. So that was obviously the big offseason move, the creation of a whole new office and of a whole new approach to dealing with the business of baseball and the organization of baseball. And we're coming up soon in a couple of weeks, 100 years to the day of the date that the Black Sox players were formally indicted. So this whole 1920 to 21 offseason is going to be featuring a lot of articles about the Black Sox because the grand jury and all that stuff already happened. And then Landis comes in, and then a couple months later, there's an official, you know, criminal investigation, and then Landis declares all the players banned for life, and then the trial doesn't actually start until the summer. So that will be fun to read about the trials of all those guys too. But I think I'm looking at this more closely. So Landis placed the players on what he called the ineligible list in March of 21. And then there was a trial that went through the summer. And so the jury trial, did you know this? It says the jury deliberates for less than 3 hours and returns a verdict of not guilty.
Yes, I know this because it was in Eight Men Out.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Which I haven't seen in a while. Yeah. So the state was actually asking for a jail sentence and a big fine. But the jury found them not guilty. And then Landis, the next day after the not guilty verdict, banished them for life from baseball. So that's interesting. Landis had his own justice separate from what the criminal courts had said. And so, right, if there was no Lasker plan, if there was no office of commissioner, how would you handle something like this, right? It would have just been up to Comiskey, the owner, to do what he wanted to do with his players. So this instead now, so that must have been, you know, that was a big change to say this independent body of this thing called Major League Baseball that was making decisions about, you know, the individual teams, individual players, individual livelihoods. So that's interesting. I definitely want to look at some more articles about the trial and all that stuff. I should watch Eight Men Out again too. So real quick, tell us what's going on with the minor leagues in 2021. I feel like I've not followed up on this news. I've been only
I remember like it popping up on my feed like about a month ago, and it just being I hadn't heard of it, and apparently it's been in the works now for a couple of years. And You know, this is something I think that we both can agree that it's happened quite often in Major League history. And Landis himself is going to do some dealings with the minor leagues down the road here in, during his tenure. But so Major League Baseball decided to restructure minor league baseball. You know, currently there's about 162 minor league teams that have ties to major league teams. Again, there's like 30, there's 30 major league teams, I think, right now. So they decided to just do a cut and dry 120 teams, four per franchise. So you have your AAA teams, like our local, you know, Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. You have your AA teams. You have your high A and your low A. So there's four affiliates per major league club. And what that's actually doing is it's actually cutting out about 42 minor league clubs from this, completely severing ties with them, which is a huge deal for some communities, right? And some fans.
So, like, who are these teams? Like, they're independent? No, they're affiliated, but they're some level that's not one of those four levels?
Well, I think from what I understand, there some of these organizations would have multiple low A teams, or maybe two high A, or, you know, I seem to remember in the recent past, there was like a couple of teams that had like a couple of double A, like maybe in different parts of the country.
I see.
And they're just streamlining it. And a lot of the teams are going to be relegated to amateur. So there's going to be no money flowing in, I guess, from the major league clubs. I guess it's up to some of these leagues. And there's even a league, the Appalachian League, which none of the teams are going to come over. I was reading an article and they were talking about how there's this, and I didn't even know about this. There's this like amazing stadium on Staten Island that has like a view of lower Manhattan, across the bay there, or across the river there. And that team is no longer going to be affiliated with the Yankees. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? It's this expensive stadium.
Oh yeah, that's also in the movie The King of Staten Island.
Oh, all right. Well, I guess I need to see that movie now.
Pete Davidson goes there.
Nice.
Yeah. I think they're called the Yankees. I think they're called the Staten Island Yankees.
Okay.
Yeah. But they're one of the teams that's getting cut out.
It sounds like it. Yeah. It sounds like they're not going to be affiliated with the Yankees anymore. So,
you know that the AA Phillies are one of the oldest affiliated teams in the league?
The Reading Phillies?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
They've been affiliated with the Phillies since the very beginning. So,
this is so cool. So, yeah, so a lot of people are upset. A lot of the diehards. I know you and I both really enjoy going to minor league games.
Oh, I love it.
There's something pure about it, especially from what I understand. I haven't been to it. I mean, when I was a kid, we used to go to it was the Cardinals up in Skylands, up in Sussex County, New Jersey. But that was like a low A team. And it was just, you could just sit like right next to the field. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, just they miss that purity of the game on that level. And just the idea that a lot of these, you know, small economies in that local area, just seeing live baseball, if you live in Appalachia, you live in an area where there's no major league, you know, there's places in the Midwest where there isn't like a minor league or major league team within a couple hundred miles.
Sure.
The idea that, you know, it's about money. It's about developing, you know, like, I think a lot of the issue that people are having is like, it's only about the major league club now. It's not about, you know, just the enjoyment of watching a baseball game. It's really, can you develop me players for the major leagues? Right. And I guess people are having a lot of, you know, they're upset about it, which makes sense. So that's kind of the recent updates. But I think, you know, like, we both agree, like, I think this has probably happened many times before. Unfortunately, it's just the nature of the game.
And the nature of the game these days, yeah, where it's all about maximizing investment potential, maximizing players. We were talking about some independent leagues and stuff. A few years ago, I was in Savannah, Georgia, and they used to have the Savannah Sand Gnats, which was the Mets high A team, I think, which made no sense that the New York Mets team was in Savannah, but they moved not all the way closer, but they moved somewhat up closer, I think, to South Carolina. And then that stadium, which is a really historic stadium, Babe Ruth had played there, has these giant fans, like ceiling fans, essentially, because it gets so hot in there over the bleachers. It's just a neat old stadium.
Wow.
But the Savannah team, then they had a this old awesome stadium, and so they decided to have to start an independent league, and they had players, a lot of guys who play high level, say in the SEC or, you know, ACC, like a lot of the Southern D1 baseball programs have really, really, really good players who maybe never get to go pro. So there were, it's a real like level of talent. And so they did, they had a contest and they named the team the Savannah Bananas. So
love it.
I have some Savannah Bananas swag. I love a funny team name. And I do love also just the sort of informal nature of just low level baseball. I'll pull over and watch a little league game, you know. I mean, I'll watch anything. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah, there's something in one of the articles that I read. It just was talking about how baseball, just the game of baseball, and just being able to see it in of itself has value versus necessarily whether or not your major league team is successful and whether it has all the best players. That's not necessarily like, you know, like for a baseball fan, it's not just about the major leagues, right? It's just about the game of baseball, right? And that we, you know, that we're losing that in some way. We're moving to a direction and that we're losing a lot of that. So
one other little thing I happened to see was Bill James, the, you know, baseball writer, was writing on Twitter about how if you look at baseball 100 years ago, one thing that changed, like you could say that like attendance is like still high, you know, like, attended partially because baseball has so many games, but if you just look at the overall number of people who attended a baseball game, it's still very high, and plus there's way more teams. But one interesting change was how many people played back then, like how many independent like just recreational teams and stuff. So I think that's sad that's lost. I think that is so cool to just imagine like every town or every whatever had its like baseball club of just way amateurs, you know, but that was such a part of American life 100 years ago. So anytime I see someone writing about 1920s baseball, I get excited about it. But he was talking about a whole nother side of it, which is like essentially fan teams, like just dudes playing. Yeah. Like,
that's makes me think of, you know, like those British or, you know, the UK local clubs, you know, every town would have a local club and you would just, you know, you just play and it was an amateur club, right? It was, makes me think of that, you know. Yeah, and there's a lot of parallels there, I think, as well, in terms of the smaller clubs and the larger clubs. And do they just exist to feed the larger clubs, or do they have their own life of their own, right? So
yeah, and 100 years ago, definitely the local pride and just the life of its own was definitely a big piece. I want to tell you one other name I saw in my just roster flipping was Cy Twombly, which is a name that is amazing because Cy Twombly is a really famous 20th century American abstract artist. I saw one of his exhibitions at MoMA and I like abstract art. Like I have a real openness to all sorts of crazy art, but his stuff is like, it really looks like you gave a child a crayon and they just ran around the room. It's like so bonkers, just like scribblings. And so I looked it up, and that is his dad. His dad was Cy Twombly, the baseball player. And the reason I recognized his name was, besides being the artist, was because our friend Jeff Gaiman talked about him when he talked about local baseball here in Bethlehem. Cy Twombly played for Lehigh's team, and I think was either that's why he came up or because he participated in that Bethlehem Steel League, this same Cy Twombly who was – mentioned here in one of these American Association teams. But he played a little bit in the majors. He played for Lehigh, and then his son became a major American artist. So Cy Twombly, yeah. Right? This is another weird connection mm-hmm. that just sort of popped up when I was clicking around here. So pretty cool stuff. He played for the Lehigh team in right around this time, in the teens maybe. So yeah, we'll tweet some link to our baseball generator. We'll tweet some just names. I tweeted a guy. What was his name? Lady. No.
Lady yeah. Baldwin.
Yeah. There's a guy named Lady Baldwin. And there was a guy named Dude. They were from like, we're talking early baseball. We're talking like late 1800s. So this is, you know, even before our area of specialty. But I appreciate any good old timey baseball name. So. Yeah, it's fun to look at a little bit at the independent leagues, the American Association, the minor leagues, then and now. We'll continue to follow the trial, the Black Sox, and the off-season rearrangings. And then before long, you know, we'll start to get some takes for the 21 season, see who we like. It's not too long.
Yep.
Yeah, not too long until pitchers and catchers report. So here's to a new year. All right, sweet bread.
All right, Buckafoot.
I will talk to you soon, and I will see you all. I won't see you, but, you know, that's what we say. I'll see you all next time on This Week in 1920 Baseball.
Later.
Later. Thank you.